Good morning, everybody. Hello, everybody. We are here again, which is always a wonderful miracle for me. Each week we do this thing, which is a live broadcast and then a podcast made into a podcast for iTunes and Spotify. This is Lizzie and Justin. We're from Turning Towards Life and Third Space. Or should I say, Turning Towards Life is a Third Space project. And we are delving into various wonderful sources that each of us find. We alternate our weeks in finding the source for us to speak about each time. And then we have this live and unrehearsed conversation, and lots of you listen and join in with us, and it's completely brilliant. And we've been doing this for, like, I don't know, a year and a half or something now, every single Sunday, and it still feels like a miracle, but we do it. And I'm very grateful to be here and grateful for this source as well that Justin's brought today.
Thank you, Lizzie. Just adjusting a window here on my computer and things are going a bit crazy as I do that. Okay, well, I think we're fine. So it's really, really good to be here. I'm really pleased to see you, Lizzie. And as always, I'm so happy to be doing this. I've been thinking a lot about, again, about practice and what it is to be in a regular practice. And boy, does this feel like a practice, which we do for its own sake, and then all kinds of things come from it, which is the nature always of practice. So I've chosen the text for today, but before we dive into this, I just want to remind everyone, if you happen to be listening somewhere before June of 2019, we are streaming this live on the 28th of April 2019, a couple of Third Space things that you might be interested in. So one is our Foundations of Coaching program, which I'm going to be leading, which is on the 3rd and 4th of June 2019 in London. And it's proven to be a really fabulous way of gathering in community and learning something very profound and very beautiful together. So it's 2 days, a step into the kind of work that we do that's given rise really to this whole conversation, Lizzie, that you and I are in. And then later in June, we begin this year's professional coaching course, which we had a grand old Third Space meeting earlier in the week and worked out who the faculty were going to be. And among many other people in the faculty, Lizzie, you and I will both be there. So I wanted to let everybody know about this, because sometimes some of you who listen or watch or join us live are interested in talking to us about all of this, and we would love to hear from you. And you can contact us directly if you're in our Facebook group. You can send us a message in the comments or message us. And we're also at wearethirdspace.org, where all the details of the program are. And just before I launch into this source for this week, you can always find our sources if you would like to read them and read some things we have to say about them at our Turning Towards Life website, which is just turningtowards.life. So I'm going to read this first, Lizzie, this poem called Thanks. And I'm reading from our website. So this is by a poet who I actually currently know not a huge amount about, whose name is W.S. Merwin. And I came across this because I was reading a beautiful article called W.S. Merwin's Poems of Ethical Care. And I love the idea that poems could be a way that would awake our ethical care for the world. And then this one has been very particularly speaking to me. It raises a great big old question for me about how to be in life and how I find myself in life very often. And it's called Thanks. So we'll do what we usually do, Lizzie. I'll read it first and then you. So it goes like this. Thanks. Listen. With the night falling, we are saying thank you. We are stopping on the bridges to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to look at the sky and say thank you. We are standing by the water, thanking it. Standing by the windows looking out in our directions, back from a series of hospitals, back from a mugging. After funerals, we are saying thank you. After news of the dead, Whether or not we knew them, we are saying thank you. Over telephones, we are saying thank you in doorways and in the backs of cars and in elevators, remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs. We are saying thank you in the banks. We are saying thank you in the faces of the officials and the rich and of all who will never change. We go on saying thank you, thank you. With the animals dying around us, taking our feelings, we are saying thank you. With the forests falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with the cities growing over us, we are saying thank you faster and faster. With nobody listening, we are saying thank you. Thank you, we are saying, and waving, dark though it is.
Thank you for reading that. Thanks. Listen, with the night falling, we are saying thank you. We are stopping on the bridges to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to look at the sky and say thank you. We are standing by the water, thanking it, standing by the windows, looking out in our directions, back from a series of hospitals, back from a mugging. After funerals, we are saying thank you. After the news of the dead, whether or not we knew them, we are saying thank you. Over telephones, we are saying thank you in doorways and in the back of cars and in elevators, remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs. We are saying thank you. In the banks, we are saying thank you in the faces of the officials and the rich and all who will never change. We go on saying thank you, thank you. With the animals dying around us, taking our feelings, we are saying thank you, thank you. With the forests falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you, thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with the cities growing over us, we are saying thank you faster and faster. With nobody listening, we are saying thank you. Thank you, we are saying and waving, dark though it is.
It's very interesting, moving, hearing you read this, Lizzie, because I can feel my body settling. I can feel a great wave of relief coming over me. And I know that one of the reasons why this poem spoke to me so strongly right now is how incredibly easy it is for me to get into despair in the midst of all the bad news that I keep on seeing about how things are. And when I get into despair, I get frozen. And when I get frozen, I can't act. And when I can't act, all of this seems ever more impossible. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels that way, who easily feels that way. I think that I have a bodily history of, in the face of enormity, of instead of feeling like my body wants to move into some kind of action, going into some kind of freeze, like a woodlouse or something, when you touch it and it rolls up. And in the midst of all of that, there's so much that's still true about the world that I lose contact with. That's so important. And this poem is so beautiful and brilliant for that, because right in the middle of all the difficult news that there is in this poem, it seems to me there's a deep, deep, deep vein of remembrance and appreciation for, oh my goodness, we got to be here at all. Whatever is happening, whatever this is like, whatever I'm hearing, whatever I'm seeing, and it's not all frightening things in this poem. There's also beautiful things like bridges in the sky and the water. But there's the possibility of some kind of sort of radical amazement and gratitude that it might be possible to find without turning away from the dark. In fact, right in the dark, being able to say, thank you, I'm here. And thank you for what all of this is that I am and that we are, and that we can muster some kind of presence and some kind of response right in the middle of it without turning and without turning away from it, which is the freeze thing that happens with my body so easily, and without pretending that we could only be joyful and we could only be grateful if everything was A-okay and there was nothing frightening for us to face.
Hmm.
So the sort of I might say more about this later as we go on, but that there is something sacred in the middle of the darkness is for me is a source of great renewal of my capacity and my wish to be in relationship and be in the world and contribute in some way.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I was saying Justin to you before, just when we were saying hello to each other before we went live, that I haven't got anything figured out to say about this, and you know, it's quite a something to read and to feel. And then when you read it to me, and then I read it again, I realized that something about us being together makes me have different responses to things rather than me just reading it on my own. Mm. And you just saying all the things that you said as well. And I feel like this is maybe a bit controversial, but I feel like this is the difference between a vegan trying to make me be a vegan and a vegan joyfully being vegan and me being interested in that because they're so joyful about it. There's a kind of attitude that's attractive about those of us who are trying to make shifts in the world. And then there's an attitude that feels hard or fighty or something. And I feel like this is an invitation for me to make this inquiry of, you know, how do I get to be in all of this? Even if I feel passionately about climate change or being a vegan or I'm not a vegan, by the way, or this work or spirituality or whatever the thing is that I'm passionately advocating for, how do I cultivate an attitude of gratitude no matter what I'm doing? So for me, it points to a kind of a way of being in the world that in spite of the struggle, in spite of the darkness, I can be a certain way that allows me to stay in connection with things that matter the most, which is the humans, without that connection, it's really hard to make shifts in the world. Because if I'm just banging down people's doors and being cross about stuff and being a kind of a warrior and a crusader for a cause or some kind, there's something in the connection that gets kind of severed. And so I'm just feeling this way of being an advocate that's in joy rather than in resentment or attack or fight. And somehow this puts the worlds right next to each other of despair and difficulty and hope and joy. And the way that the thank yous are woven into the whole thing feels to me like it's trying to show us that the seeds and the buds are growing in amongst the concrete. Like just because there's concrete there doesn't mean that the flowers can't find the shoot right in the middle of that. And it's making me think about all of our, like, my passion getting twisted into something that's not actually life-giving for me anymore. And how what this poem's pointing to is a kind of self-love in amongst difficult feelings and difficult concepts that aren't solvable, but that just because I can't solve something, I can't fix something, doesn't mean that I get to be devoid of joy and gratitude, and to take that on as if it doesn't have to debilitate me. Mm. I can still hold it, and I can still be dedicated to it, and I can still have a life and be joyful, and let that not be taking away from my passion or the thing I believe in.
As you were talking, it's my attention is being drawn to a couple of lines right in the heart, bang in the middle of the poem. Remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs, we are saying thank you. In the banks, we're saying thank you in the faces of the officials and the rich and of all who will never change. We go on saying thank you, thank you. And it might sound like such a paradox what you said about joy in the face of really big things. I mean, there is so much suffering in the world, and the vast proportion of it is suffering that we have brought, us humans, we have brought on one another and on everything around us. We seem to have this enormous capacity for that. And when we see all of the injustice in the world, and we see how badly things are working out for so many people, it's really easy, as you were saying, for the hardening of our own hearts to happen. You know, for some of us, like I was saying, for me, that the thing that's most easy for me, I suppose I must have been doing this since I was very, very, very tiny, is in the face of some kind of threat, is kind of going rigid and disappearing, which is, I think, a big part of my own personality structure, is to do that if I'm not really onto it. But others of us get rageful, and others of us get like really self-centered, and others of us pretend it's not happening. And I've read two things, not this poem, in the last few weeks, written by people who are looking square on into the face of the difficulties of climate change, and also what it might do to us, and also what it's going to take for us to not just sleepwalk into it. And both of them said something that I found really extraordinary, that's right in the midst of the spirit of this poem, is they said, we would not choose to be alive at any other time. Here we are right here facing racism and inequality and oppression and the desecration of our forests and the changes to our climate and all that. And we would not choose to be alive at any other time, but now. Now is the time. And they wrote it both with such joy and gratitude at the possibility that not only might we find a way to be joyful in this and to feel grateful for being here, but that that might also serve us to make whatever contribution there is to make, whether it's to the person I'm speaking to, you know, for me, whether it's not freezing up and disappearing, but actually being in genuine heartfelt contact with another human being, like being in conversation with you, Lizzie, or with my family, or whether it's getting out on the streets to make a stand about something, or whether it's working quietly behind the scenes to change something that everyone thought couldn't be changed, or whether it's getting on with taking care of some small people who are growing, or, you know, there's endless ways to do this, that it is yet possible right in the middle of the times that we feel afraid, maybe even because we feel afraid, to come at it. Well, this is something I'm just kind of getting onto as I'm saying it. I hadn't anticipated. What W.S. Merwin invites us into is, instead of waiting until I don't feel afraid, to be in contact with gratitude and joy and hope and possibility, to be in contact with it right when I am most afraid, when I can see how many things are broken and how hard it is. That's the time to be in contact with all of this. That's what allows us to stay in and to stay compassionate and stay available and stay creative and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's occurring to me as well, you know, you mentioned little ones and attending to little ones in the world, like those people who are younger than us. And as you were speaking, it kind of really occurred to me that unless we are joyfully in relationship to the world, and that we love the world, and we explicitly, in an embodied way, are in love with the world, how could we instill in them a love of the world that would mean that there was something worth saving anyway? Like, it's a kind of, feels like a necessary part that, to instill that kind of love of this world, we have to have that attitude, like that there's a deep foundational relationship to the world that comes from our gratitude for it, that gets passed on from generation to generation, that means that there's something to cherish. Because without there being something to cherish, like if it's all bad, how do the younger ones of in our lives cotton on to the love if we're complaining and worrying and feeling like there's no hope and we're in despair, if that's the message that we're giving to our children without realizing that the relationship to the world, the foundation of our relationship to the world, is at that time in our lives, we don't have this kind of intellectual, rational understanding of even what's outside of our house sometimes, or how big the world is yet, because our systems aren't really ready for that yet. We need to be nurtured way before we reach into politics. And in that nurturing, for there to be a foundation of appreciation and joy and love and cherishing of one another and the world, it would be impossible to then speak of why it's important to stand up for things or join in with things or fight for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like this thank you invitation is a big, important anchoring principle to include the experience of life itself in all of this, and to not let it be our personalities running wild with a very well-meaning passion, but that we lose ourselves. We lose selfhood that is love, that is joyful, and that has the capacity to choose all the time how to be in amongst all of this. No matter what the circumstance, we have a choice.
I so agree with you that this is important for those who come after us. But also, as you were speaking, I could feel how important it is for all of us. That it's not just about, it is about what we teach to others, but it's also about what we can find, how we can find to respond in the midst of things too. And I was thinking, you know, he's a bit of a hero of mine that I've keep on mentioning, and I've yet to find a source that I can bring, but Nachman of Bratslav, who was this spiritual teacher, rabbi and spiritual teacher in the 17th, 18th and 19th century in Eastern Europe. I was just listening to a talk about him this week, and one of the things that he had a life full of difficulty, and one of the things that he was well known for was being a teacher of longing, of the gap between what we wish for and how things are, that was his predominant mood. And yet he still taught that it was a great responsibility and blessing to be joyful always, he would say. And his followers were just coming in the Jewish world, were just coming up to next week to Holocaust Memorial Day, which is a big remembering of something so impossibly dark. And his followers, even when they knew the worst was coming, kept dancing. And it wasn't a denial of what was coming, but it also wasn't at the same time a denial, I think, of something very, very basic and important and alive and real about being a human being, is our capacity to meet the life that we're in right at this moment with joy for its own sake, but also, Lizzie, for the reasons that you're saying, that I'm one of the things I love about doing this is how much I learned from our conversation is that what joy and gratitude in the middle of things, when they're not simplistic, when they're not a kind of turning away, but are actually a being in the world full, you know, full bodied and open hearted, and probably broken hearted, actually, that our joy and broken heartedness together are what give us the possibility of cherishing things enough to respond. Right, even perhaps in the moments where we can't even imagine that our response will bring about any change.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we give up on our own lives and we give up on life itself in some way. There's something in W.S. Merwin's words here about how the stream of joyfulness that is an inseparable part of life, if we'll attend to it, even when we're afraid and sad and angry and despairing and all of that.
Yeah. It's interesting, Justin. It's taking me back to the kind of when I was a lot younger and traveled around different places and, you know, coming from a life of privilege where I could always, you know, I could always eat something and I had clothes and I had an education and all those things. And then throwing myself into cultures where that wasn't the case and feeling really thrown by just how joyful one could be with nothing. And how that kind of planted a seed in me of going like, oh, so it's not stuff that has me be happy, then what is it? And that big inquiry starting, you know, when I was relatively young, like in my late teens, going, oh, this is an awakening for me that I haven't understood this yet, that my circumstance is not the determinant of my well-being. Because if this is possible, if this joy is possible with a little piece of cardboard and some coconuts, what am I complaining about? Like, how does complaint work? What's the function of complaint? How am I displeased with things? What's happening? And it's not like I got the answers to those questions, but I remember the questions being born and of course it never being really answered. Even now it's not answered. But that question of gratitude and joy, whatever my circumstances, whatever I have and whatever I don't have, is a possibility. And how empowering that is, like how kind of how freedom in that way really matters. And I think this is a very, very intricately brilliant poem to say that without it. I don't know, I think that's the beauty of poetry, like a kind of a dump of beauty within it that you see all these different strands. And I love the way there's no punctuation in here, there's no capital letters. I don't know if that's the same in your version, but I feel like there's intention in that as well, this kind of stream of in amongstness that I feel is the nature of having a way of being in amongst life, whatever that might look like.
Mm. Really strikes me from what you're saying that it may well be that a big part of what keeps us on destructive paths, addictive destructive paths, which is really what this poem describes, is this very sense that you're saying you started to get onto in your late teens, which is it's possible for us to be joyful and grateful in circumstances that we could not even imagine feeling joyful and grateful in, and because the alternative to it is something like I'll only feel joyful when and almost everything in this poem, you could say, I'll only feel joyful when I or my people have oppressed yours and we're on top. I will only feel joyful when I have X, Y, and Z resources and I'm not for a moment making, and I know that you're not sort of glamorizing being not having enough resource to be able to eat or, you know, any of those kind of things. The opposite, the fear-fueled thing we have in our culture of, I could only be joyful if I reserve the right to fly anywhere else, anywhere I want in the world, or to have exactly my way, or to have exactly what I want. And that keeps on fueling us away from ourselves and away from ourselves and away from relationship. We imagine all the time what we are at risk of losing and what we won't have if we lose it, or we won't have if we won't get it. And maybe that's why the ethics in this poem of care and gratitude right in the middle of what's happening are so vitally important for us, actually, that I don't have to keep on grasping. I don't have to keep on grabbing. I don't have to. Maybe just this, and maybe just whatever it is that we have to do that I hadn't signed up for. Like, I don't feel like I signed up for living in a world where there were many, many difficult things that we have to sort out. If, you know, I imagine that I signed up for a life of ease and comfort and, you know, no trouble. But then when I look at the way the world has always been, it's always called on us to respond. And we've talked about this many, many times, but it's coming to me again. There's something about the narratives in which so many of us are apprenticed in our culture, which tells us always be dissatisfied and always keep on grasping for the next thing instead of being grateful for what's here. And then I think that that's part of what splits us either into I have to keep grasping or I have to be so afraid that everything's going to fall apart and I won't be able to cope. Yeah. So it's quite a thing for this poem to bring us back to something in central, which is, oh my goodness, we're here. Look at that. Maybe that can be our starting point. So I'm looking at the time and seeing that, I don't know what it's like for anyone listening, but when we're talking, it goes so quickly.
Yeah.
Half an hour, it's gone. So we are at our time for this week. And I want to say, Lizzie, thank you to you, as always, for showing up with such, it's such a thing that we both get to do this and keep on showing up week after week. And thank you to all of you who joined us live this morning and are watching later on YouTube or on our website or on a podcast, listening on a podcast somewhere. We are so very glad to have you with us. And all being well, we will be here again next Sunday morning at the beginning of May. And we'll see you then.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.